Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
It is the last thing a parent wants to encounter, a social worker at the door with allegations of child abuse. Surprisingly, such allegations can be based on little more than a gut feeling. Those mandated to report potential child abuse are apparently encouraged to base their suspicions on signs that appear to have only a vague connection to the child abuse and even may be based on the accuser's feelings. Authorities have operated under the mantra that the child's health and safety, not preserving the family, quote-unquote, shall be the paramount concern, as enshrined in the 1997 Adoption and Safe Families Act, spearheaded by then-First Lady Hillary Clinton. Today, we're going to look into just how devastating this has been to families, across, you know, specifically zeroing in on Philadelphia, as my guest is Philadelphia Councilman-at-Large David O. Thanks, Councilman, for being with us.
Oh, thanks for the invitation.
We had you on the program a couple years ago telling about how you know, what happened in your family with your son. Just give us a brief reminder as to how you became so concerned about the system that was supposedly set up to protect children from child abuse.
Sure. What happened is, as a Philadelphia councilman, I am very accessible to the public, and I meet all kinds of people, and they tell me all kinds of things. Some things I can help with, some things I can't, some things I really have to look into. One woman in particular began to tell me about her child who was wrongfully taken from her and kept from her by the government, but beyond that, had been placed with a sexual predator, and after the little girl, who's like maybe 10 years old, had run away, she was returned to that sexual predator and victimized again. This is kind of hard to understand what she's talking about, but she did bring me eventually, this took a period of time for her to explain this to me, because she had some issues in her life, and I think that's important to say, because most of the people who this happens to are vulnerable people. And anyway, so when she brought me a newspaper article that basically reported on the fact that her daughter was in DHS custody, Department of Human Services, placed with a foster parent who sexually abused her, she had run away and was returned to that sexual abuser, and that he was eventually arrested and prosecuted and put in jail. Mm-hmm. So that kind of confirmed that what she was saying was true. I was trying to look into how I could help her. Was this just one, you know, kind of something that fell through the cracks? Or was this something more than that? And in following it up, I spoke to someone from city council who had left Philadelphia but had worked on her case. And when I contacted that person, a woman who is an attorney, she affirmed everything that was being said and also told me that she had been threatened by DHS and they had tried to disbar her from the practice of law, and she was very resentful of how she was treated, so forth and so on. While that was going on, I was in the process of teaching my children martial arts. And I really did it, you know, because like children will be, when they have to go to school, they can't wake up, but Saturday and Sunday, they're up at the crack of dawn when mom's trying to sleep.
So right, exactly.
I told my wife, you know what, I'm going to start teaching them martial arts. My wife took them to martial arts school. She signed them up for piano. She later discontinued them going to martial arts school. It had nothing to do with me, but I'm a long time participant of the martial arts since I was a child. And
in fact, don't you have a black belt?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I compete. I teach. I do all those things on and off. But I have all the equipment. I have mats. I have uniforms. I have training equipment. Mm-hmm. And so I set up a little mat place in my house, and I began to teach my children. every Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. They would they would learn martial arts. One day, as I'm teaching them to roll, you know, I'm doing judo throws on them, and by accident, my son lands hard between his shoulder and his ear. I rush it. I get my wife. We run to the hospital with him. And I think he was 8 years old at the time. It might have been nine. Anyway, to make a long story short, the treatment that we received at the hospital was a brand new experience, and it really opened the door or opened the window into what was going on. Basically, a social worker came in and basically said she was going to report us to the me, in particular to DHS, because she said that anytime a child gets hurt by an adult male, she notifies DHS. And here we have, you know, a routine, a sports injury with all types of safety equipment, as evidenced by photographs on my, you know, cell phone.
Right.
I didn't go in telling them who I am. And that's actually an important thing to say. I just came in like someone, like, you know, with a hurt child
citizen.
From a, ordinary citizen with a zip code of one of the poor, more crime-ridden areas of Philadelphia. That's where I live. And my wife doesn't speak English well. She's from Korea. You know, just kind of rushed in, shorts, T-shirt, that type of thing. And so I was not treated in any special way. I was treated as, because if they did know who I was, they would have treated me differently.
And
that is, you know, one of the problems that occurs. You know, people who are treated better and people who are treated worse based on what their job is, who they are, that type of thing. You know, from there, you know, I talked with the doctor, and the doctor said ultimately that this is not something that should be reported to DHS, but it was too late. The social worker already, you know, reported it. And sure enough, you know, the next week we had a DHS worker come out to our house. She was as nice as could be, looked at everything and said it's the case is unfounded. Interviewed my son, looked at all the sports equipment, the training equipment, safety equipment, and closed the case. But I told my wife, I think I should go talk to the hospital because, you know, maybe this social worker had a bad day. I'm not sure, but I think it's important to let them know so it doesn't happen to the next person.
Right.
And I met the executive vice president and this supervisor of social work. And they told me that everyone in the hospital is trained to report to DHS if they even have a gut feeling. If something looks a little off or they have a...
just some kind of suspicion or
something. They have a tingling in their spine, you know, type of thing. So what they're telling me is without any evidence, if they just feel that something's a little off, they report. The question is, what do they report? Because what they're supposed to report, they cannot report accident, funny feeling. They would have to report abuse.
Exactly.
Some type of abuse, right? So from there, I went to talk to the DHS commissioner in Philadelphia. Just to
and
let
that's
her know.
That's the Department of Human Services. Okay.
Just to let her know that I went to one of our finest hospitals, and this is what happened by the social worker. And then when I talk to the executives, they're telling me this is how they train the entire staff to use gut feelings. And
what happened to evidence?
Without evidence,
So, what happened to being innocent until proven guilty?
Well, you know, what happened is I read the Child Protective Services Act. I had not read it when I went to talk to the hospital folks. But I read it, and the standard is you have to have reasonable suspicion of abuse. And myself being an attorney and a former Philadelphia prosecutor, and then for many years having done a variety of work, including criminal defense work, I understand exactly what that standard is. And it is, as you said, based on evidence. So when I talked to the DHS commissioner in Philadelphia, she said, oh, no, they did everything right. They are supposed to report if they have a suspicion or a gut feeling that something isn't right. Her explanation is it's better to have more reports than less, it's better to be safe than sorry. Now, that sounds good in a vacuum. However, you know, if you take what that means, for example, if I have a gut feeling, though I have no reasonable suspicion based on evidence that there is a fire, And I am told that I have to pull a fire alarm every time I have a gut feeling and I go around pulling fire alarms in the city of Philadelphia. We will have fire engines and ladders and fire apparatus and fire personnel showing up all over our city based on gut feelings, which means they're exhausted, they're overworked, they are not actually responding to the fires when they are just going to false alarms.
And actually, there's a law against that. There's a law against pulling. There's a law against pulling. Fire alarms when there are not fires.
Right. So it's the opposite with DHS. There's a law that if you are a mandated reporter, which means you're a camp counselor, you're a teacher in a public school, you're a child care worker.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is if they find out later that a child was injured or was there was a case involving, not even confirming that there was some type of abuse, even if it is neglect and it's not even abuse, even if it is a suspicion of, but that you did not report it, you could lose your license.
Wow.
And so the law is, report it or else.
Yeah.
There is no consequence if you simply report and report and report and report a suspected abuse with no evidence. There
so apparently,
is a
penalty you get more
star- if you don't.
Apparently, you get a promotion or more stars after your name the more reports you give.
Yeah. So it's a flaw in the law, and it's a flaw in the fact that the law is being misinterpreted.
Yeah.
Do
you think part of this came after the Jerry Sandusky situation in
Pennsylvania? Yes, that's exactly where it came from. In other words, it's a reaction from people. It's a reaction from legislators who are, after the fact, trying to do something that, in retrospect, had it been done, it would have addressed perhaps the Jerry Sandusky, Sandusky case in some manner. However, what they've done is created a system which now is creating unintended harm to children and to families. And it has to be, people ask me, what is the solution? And the solution is to follow the law.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot report child abuse based on gut feelings.
Exactly.
And when people are being trained, mandated reporters, the training affirms that, given a choice of, getting more information, talk to a colleague, interviewing the caretaker, or simply reporting, the answer is always simply report. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact, for example, that if I'm running a hospital and all of a sudden you, a nurse, are unable to work because 6 months ago there was a child who fell off a bike and the father and the mother and the child said, I fell off the bike, and you didn't report it, and now 6 months later someone's doing an investigation and they're saying, oh, you saw this and you didn't report, you may not be able to come to work and I may be short, a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
So what do I do as an administrator? I am tempted to tell everyone, just report anything. We don't need the government coming down and bothering us. And I think that's where we have ended up, why there's so much false reporting. On top of that, the reporting to DHS has become weaponized. Many people, particularly here in Philadelphia, when they are angry with each other, and we have a lot of violence, we're heading towards the number one homicide city in the United States.
Oh, wow.
When they are battling with each other, one of the things that they know to do is to make an anonymous phone call to DHS because they want to hurt the other person, and one way is by having their children removed from them. So, that then comes to the next problem. You have anonymous reporting where, for example, I can simply call, the DHS hotline and anonymously report that you are abusing, beating, striking, harming your children. And I could call 30 times. And then someone comes knocking on your door from DHS, and they simply say, we're investigating, but they don't tell you who or what.
Yeah.
What are you investigating?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, potential, situation with your children. And so you don't know what they're looking for, and they don't have to look for that. In other words, if I am a detective, police officer, and I'm showing at your home, I have a warrant, a search warrant that I got from a judge because I had to swear out an affidavit identifying you as a subject of a criminal investigation and identify that I'm looking for a shotgun. Now, a shotgun is not with your fork and knives. It's not in your sock drawer. It's not under your underwear. You know, where could a shotgun be? But here, when they come in, they don't have a warrant. They're not identifying what they're looking for. They're not telling you why they're there. They're just looking around. And after 3 or 4 months of investigating, they can then tell you they've determined that the anonymous allegations are unfounded, but they're going to remove your children because of something they've seen in your house, and it'll be up to judge to return the children.
If the social worker does not come with a warrant or with a detective with a warrant, do parents have to let them in to their home?
No. But again,
just the fact that someone, a social worker, showing up at your home, that in itself is intimidating.
Well, yeah, you don't have to let them in, and we tell people don't let them in. They have no right to come in simply because they show up to your house.
Right.
However, what they will do oftentimes is tell you that they will come back with the police, and they do. And unfortunately, the police don't know any better.
Yeah.
The police simply were contacted by the county, and they're doing a courtesy. They show up. Listen, why do you need the police at your house? Are you violent? Are you a threat? No, you're at your house. It's your rights. It's your property. But they'll call and say, we're dealing with a allegation of child abuse. Mm-hmm. You know, this could be turned violent. We need your help. And the police will show up for a fellow governmental agency, right?
Right.
And now you're facing a law officer who has got a gun and handcuffs and a badge, and who is trained to basically enforce things.
Right.
And this is not some place they need to be. But, you know, under those circumstances, they will threaten you if it gets this far, that if you don't cooperate, they will have to use force.
You're going to end up in jail. Now, I'm looking at the numbers.
Yeah, kind of your word against their word at that
point
in time.
I'm looking at the numbers from 2018. There are more than 5,500 cases of suspected child abuse or neglect in Philadelphia. They were reported in Philadelphia. And the Department of Human Services placed 2,700 children in the foster care system that year.
Mm-hmm.
That's about one out of every 125 children in the city were placed in foster care. We'll leave our discussion with Councilman O here and continue our discussion of the foster care system next time with Councilman O.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.